on Amazon, it says you're a daughter, business manager, aerobics instructor, mother, friend, writer, sister, educational consultant, wife, activist for the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. In a previous incarnation, you were a philosophy teacher, cook, student, carpool driver. You're a member of the Society for Values in Higher Education, the Ridge and Valley Conservancy, and the New Jersey chapter of the World Future Society Executive Boards. And you've been learning how to make foreign more familiar and weave the ordinary and the extraordinary into each other while you're busting cultural stereotypes.
Yes, I actually even show up as a 71-year-old wearing a chainmail vest. So part of it is, in fact, to do everything I can to counter the stereotypes and yet reinforce the generalizations that we should all know about each other, because that's what education is about, generalizing. But it has to stop short of stereotyping. And so I walk that very fine line between the two, and most of the time haven't stepped on my own toes.
You have a fascinating background. Your family comes to America in 46, and you don't know any English, but you learn English really fast. And then your academic career takes off, and it coincides with the academic career of an artist named Bennett Bean. And the two of you go to a university as faculty after being in the hotbed out in Berkeley, and you're hired, and then you leave academia. You just have this whirlwind life, but you've written this book, The Chopsticks Fork Principle, and that will be the basis of what you're speaking at Murray State, I suppose.
Yes. I called the book The Chopsticks Fork Principle because I basically want people to look at the ordinary events in life, not the big series, but the ordinary events like dining. Why do Americans or Westerners, or at least people like my mother-in-law, who was a WASP to the hills, why does she have this long table that aesthetically is beautiful? It's got flowers and candlesticks and all these things going down the middle of the table, and yet you can't talk to the person on the other side because you can't even see them. Now, there's a reason for that, and there's a reason why you have 20,000 utensils at the table, a cup for or a glass for every kind of liquid, a utensil to eat any kind of food, etc. And it's an aesthetic occasion. And the whole idea is that everybody has to sort of go to the abracadabra school of cooking. So you make the food just appear. Well, at a Chinese dinner, this is not an aesthetic situation. It is a functional one. You are there to bond with each other. So you don't have anything interrupting your sight of everybody else. And in Chinese, this is particularly important because unless you're looking up, you have no clue what's going on because we have the same word for he, she, and it. So everybody's waving their arms around and pointing to he, she, or it. So you have to look up and you have to participate. And it's a whole different deal than the American kind of dining where it's individualistic and it's equal opportunity. I could be sitting next to someone the size of Schwarzenegger, and I get the same amount as he does, which is insane because I'm only 5 feet tall. I mean, even if I tried to eat it all, I couldn't. But in the Asian situation, you have this Lazy Susan, which delivers all the food, and you take what you want, and nothing is thrown out. In the end, you're going to get it for breakfast, reheated. So it's the whole idea of serving and then throwing out the food is just a whole different approach to waste or to sanitation, whichever way you want to look at it.
So the thrust of what you do as a human being is to point out that we'll know a whole lot more about each other if we just ask about the stuff that seems odd to us.
Yes. I mean, we live in the middle of absolutely nowhere, northwestern New Jersey, where my husband has a studio. So our son basically played with chickens for about the first 3 years of his life. Then he finally goes to preschool. And on the first day, he was basically Chinese. It was his job to be a student. So I took him to the school. I dropped him off. I left. I came back 5 hours later, picked him up. And he had been doing what he was supposed to do as a student. He listened to the teacher and behaved as he thought he was supposed to behave, because that was his role in the family. Well, the second day I take him back, and he's an American. I drop him off. I turn around, and he starts to cry. And I go back, and I said, William, you're crying. What's the matter? He goes, nothing. I said, why are you crying? He said, I'm supposed to. Well, Americans go by the rule, and he realized that everybody, including half of the parents, was standing around the door crying. And so then you have to ask, because you can't read people's minds. I said, well, why do you think they're crying? He says, because children who are dropped off at school cry, and sometimes so do their mothers. I said, well, why do you think they cry? Because we'll miss you. I said, well, how can you miss me? I was just here. I mean, let's get real here. So the second time he was dealing with what is the rule? Thou shalt do this, thou shalt not do that, which is very Western, whereas the Asian approach is do anything you need to do to accomplish the practical goal. So there is no thou shalt not. There was a wonderful study in Hawaii, because it was 50% Asian, 50% Caucasian. And they found that when a Caucasian generally got drunk at a party, he would either go to sleep in the corner or he'd get on the table and totally act out. But when an Asian got drunk at a party, he would spend the rest of the party trying to get everybody else drunk, because it's a relational participation situation. There's no thou shalt not be drunk. It's thou shalt not be the only one that's drunk. And so it's very different. And as I said, unless you get into the cultural values and norms, one, you'll feel totally intimidated, but also that you will close off all the opportunities to learn different ways at looking at any situation. So it doesn't mean you have to like it or even approve of it, but to understand it. So it's kind of what my husband did. When he became a potter, he basically learned how to make pottery from every different culture, and that was his dictionary. And then from that, he decided to do whatever it was he did, which was to basically ignore everything he learned. But at least he knew what he was ignoring.
You have this boundless wealth of humor about you, and I suppose it's very useful in helping everyone understand that we can all laugh with each other, but we need to understand each other.
Right. I mean, the hardest thing for anybody to do, I think, in any culture, is to admit, I don't get it. But you have to do that, because you're inviting somebody else to teach you what is it that you didn't get. I mean, I took my grandchildren in Shanghai to the aquarium, and I realized that we were the only ones looking at the fish. Everybody else had their cameras out, taking pictures of their children and grandchildren with their backs to the fish. And they got that shot, and they move on to the whales or the whatever else. They never looked at the fish. And part of it is that the picture is there not just to commemorate the occasion, but to be able to share it with others, so that when you go home or whatever, you can show people that you were at the aquarium, and in some sense be inviting them to be with you there. The hell with the fish. that's just a bunch of fish. So it's a very different approach to how you step into a situation. When a Japanese student went to Bowdoin College, where my son went to college, she was terrified because she realized that half of the bathrooms were co-ed. Well, in Japan, you die rather than go to a public bathroom. Here, they're co-ed and everything, but you have privacy in an elevator. Nobody ever looks at each other in an elevator. You could probably undress in an elevator in New York, and nobody would pay attention. And yet in Japan, they have professional shovelers people actually, with white gloves on, shove as many people humanly possible into an elevator. So you're totally crammed. And then they'll bow in front of the elevator as it leaves the floor. And yet in New York, you can be crowded, but no one ever touches. Okay? It's all sort of a sense of privacy. I mean, people say that oh, love is the same all over. No, love is not the same. Hunger isn't the same. That we have to eat and that we have to relate to each other, unless you're a hermit, is not universal. It's just done in such different ways that you've got to laugh. I mean, the whole PC thing is people walk around with on eggshells, and they're so afraid to either be insulted or to insult somebody else. And so it's like the feminist situation. I'm female, so I can talk about menopause. Well, I'm Chinese, so I can make fun of all the ways we can have fun without being afraid of insulting myself, because I'm doing it.
How do you make your life journey and insights a point for teaching?
Oh, well, I don't think I do it anything on purpose. When I'm in a classroom, whether it's here or in Shanghai, I just talk the way I do. I've talked to kindergarten kids and obviously university faculty. You just have to, in some sense, be so comfortable with yourself. And I wasn't always this way. You do it. In my talk, I say, if you don't have a sense of humor, pretend. And the idea is not to pretend that you understand what you don't, but to pretend you have the courage to be yourself, and at some point or another, you start believing it. Same thing with stories, your life stories. They don't just come into your head. I mean, some of the stuff that goes on in terms of tweeting and Facebooking is to presume that everybody in the world really cares whether you're sitting in a lawn chair or in a straight back chair. But what is universal is that in some cultures, we sit not on the floor, but on a piece of furniture. And in other cultures, we don't. So if you would look at, as I say, what seems to be so familiar, the idea of sitting, but see it from a foreigner's viewpoint, and then have some fun at it, you break down everybody's guard. And I give the same talks in China to Chinese faculty as I do here in the same manner. And they seem to laugh at the same time. I'm not sure whether I should mention this. The only time that they didn't laugh, my audience didn't laugh at the same time, was at the Air Force Academy. I mean, they laughed, but not where everybody else laughed. And that itself was very interesting, because I had never been there before. So you start asking, well, why was this funny rather than that? And you learn something, I hope.
Yes, indeed. And I must ask you, as we leave this very brief interview, is it true that is it the Orange Hotel? Or no. What hotel in China has oranges, a Rubik cube?
Oh, the Orange Hotel.
The Orange Hotel. Tell that story. It's a tweet you just put up.
In a relational or traditional culture like the Asians or the Irish or the Italians, parents don't say please and thank you. Oh, please get straight A's, or thank you so much for making your bread. That please and thank you is to presume that people had a choice. My son, for example, did not have a choice. He was a student. That was what he was supposed to be. Please and thank you also, again, presumes that you can say no. And in a relational society, you can't. So at the Orange Hotel, they'd become Americanized enough to have the do not disturb signs. But instead of saying do not disturb, it says go away. And then in parentheses, it says please. That's the only thing I wish I'd stolen. It's wonderful because it's how people mix and match things. I mean, now you go to Chinese restaurants and they'll give you a plate, a dinner plate, and then expect you to eat rice off of it with chopsticks. I'm sorry, it's just not possible to eat rice off of a plate with good grace with chopsticks. And so I've seen Asians actually pick up the whole plate as they would pick up a bowl and start shoveling the rice into their mouths, which of course would have totally appalled my WASP mother-in-law. But you have to understand, give them a fork if you're going to have a plate.
Oh, my gosh. Well, listen, we're glad you're coming to Murray State and hope you have safe travels here. And thanks for arranging to speak with me.
Oh, and thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.